of the internationally acclaimed Positive Personal Power Podcast. This webcast is devoted to pillars of success and philosophies of life and the hardcore tools you must have to achieve success in business and life. Distinguished and successful, internationally known business and thought leaders Nathaniel Skula and Stephen J. Manning give you their hardcore tools to succeed in business and life. Skula and Manning are as hardcore about success as boot camps in the military and training camps in professional sports. Now, here is your host, Nathaniel Skula.
Wow. Well, I am here today with Stephen J. Manning. We finished up Imposter Syndrome Awareness Day yesterday. And I wanted to say, Stephen, thank you so much for joining me today. We're here to talk about imposter syndrome. I know you haven't suffered from imposter syndrome, but you've managed a lot of people over the years and you've seen a lot of behaviors. I have been studying imposter syndrome for around 3 years because I'm a co-founder of Imposter Syndrome Awareness Day. And from what I gather, from what I've learned, people have this kind of, they have a program in the back of their mind that is saying to them that they're unable to do something, that they're a fraud, right? I think we've talked a lot about confidence. We've talked about confidence aligning with abilities and competence. And I listened to Dr. Peterson the other day, and he was saying everybody has imposter syndrome, which I thought was interesting. I kind of like his brutal approach. Some people kind of find him a bit of a misogynist, but I like his approach, and I like the way that he actually is not afraid to stand up and say what he believes. So thank you, Stephen, once again for joining. Thanks everyone for watching and listening. And yeah, we are very, very pleased to be joined by you.
Thank you, Nat, very much. Appreciate you having me. Looking forward to our chat on what I think is a very challenging topic. Just a digression. There's probably room for misogyny in the world, you know. At least we need to figure out how not to be that, you know. But thank you very much for inviting me and having me on this. This is kind of cool.
It's a real pleasure. And yeah, I mean, from what I've kind of gathered over the past 3 years of studying this subject is we have this belief system that is basically it begins when we're seven and then it becomes more ingrained in our brains. By the time we're 21 years old, these beliefs are actually really driving our behaviors and our results that we are achieving. So I think, you know, for me, I kind of realized that there was this really great benefit of understanding more about imposter syndrome was understanding my belief system that was actually guiding my behavior, right? And so I sat down and I was like, well, what am I going to do here? So how am I going to kind of improve? And every morning I sat down with a piece of paper and I wrote down what I believed about myself. And I sat down and some days I was really brutal and I would say awful things to myself. And I was like, just cross that out. And I actually crossed it out and I said, that's not true, but thanks for sharing that. And I went through this whole process, very cathartic kind of process that lasted, I don't know, probably a month, maybe 2 months. And I every so often I still go back to it. And I catch my subconscious saying derogatory things to myself. And I'm like, well, hold on a minute. That's just not true. And I sit down and sometimes I shout at myself. So I'm a bit brutal, you know, whereas a lot of these ladies who we were interviewing, everyone was pretty much female who was there. They were all like, well, be kind to yourself. And, you know, you need to be kind to yourself and all this. And I was like, well, maybe I'm just too brutal with myself. But I think that there is a room for that. And maybe it's just the difference between men and women and how we behave versus how females behave is what I said to Kim. But she's actually quite brutal to herself. So I think maybe that's just my perspective. I think it could be clouded, you know?
Oh, I don't think your perspective is clouded. As you're talking, the whole self-evaluation thing is a subject that we can talk about for a week or two or three. But I'm just going to focus on something you said about be kind to yourself. As you know, I'm not big on the self touchy-feely stuff. I'm entirely too pragmatic to sit back and whine. Now, I carry a handkerchief in case there are tears about, but that's because you never know when you run into a lady who cries and you have to have a handkerchief. But there is a big difference between be kind to yourself and don't beat yourself up over that and just brutal self-flagellation. My wife, whom you know, clearly the much smarter person in this union, will often tell me, hey, don't beat yourself up over that. Emphasis is the that. Because as you know, I bring the same passion to breakfast as I bring to world calamities, you know. Yeah, you're right. It can be exhausting to be me. But hey, I live with this. So, you know.
Exactly. Depends who's saying that, right?
Exactly. Exactly. So the point about being kind to yourself, how distant is that from, lying to yourself or just give yourself a pass on what? On everything, on all sorts of bad behaviors, all sorts of behaviors that foretell your future. And that, I think, is the crux of getting rid of these pathologies. It's your future. On the line. Now, the job is going to be there. In the morning, your boss is still going to be wretched. Things will be no matter how you feel in the evening, when you go to work in the morning, you'll find out the stuff you left on the desk is still there. But the whole idea of feeling like an imposter, at some point that you become impotent, you're stuck. You know what? And then when you believe that you're not, I was going to say a bad word, you're not entitled. No. When you're not capable, or you don't have the opportunity to grow, get better, go to what we preach is success, then you are in fact stuck. Then you are stuck. Man, you don't need a psychiatrist at that point. What you need is people who've been there, done that, and they're just going to tell you that that's what you're doing is just insufficient. And then they're going to give you tools to find the sufficiency, meaning, yeah, I can do this. And then, of course, the Holy Grail, well, then go do it. What's holding you back? Some of the stuff that you talk about addresses what exactly is holding you back. And it's interesting when you mentor people as you have, when you ask, okay, so why aren't you doing it? And you get the, and then you get into that stuff that I refute. Oh, I will. Someday I'm going to do that. Something going to do that. Really? Really? As you like when I say this, someday I'll do this, someday that. You're right. I'm going to get ready, and I'm going to go there, whatever. To me, that's Swiss cheese without the cheese. There's nothing there. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, that's sort of a top line.
I agree completely. I agree completely.
We preach getting past that.
Yeah. We preach taking action, right? Like people need to take action. Yeah. Like this is the worst thing is that people are like, well, I've got imposter syndrome and, they say to themselves, oh, I'm not very good at this, or I'm a failure and I can't do that. And it's like, look, you need to just take action, because a couple of these coaches who spoke yesterday, they were kind of talking about that. And I said, well, it's great to just like take action. Yeah. Like when I went to jiu-jitsu the first time and for the last year, pretty much, I just get trashed by people that are better than me, right? And you understand that perhaps you've got capabilities in other styles, and you might, you've got other abilities, but actually, when someone's got their knee on your belly and you can't move, right, because they're kneeling right in the middle of your solar plexus, like, that is like, well, okay, so my ability is not aligning with what I want it to be. So what am I going to do, right? I'm going to take action and I'm going to get better and I'm going to keep showing up and I'm going to force myself to move forwards, right? And this is the same with everything. Like I did like a live video the other day on my own, and I don't like talking on my own, right? Like it's not a fear that I have. Okay, maybe it is a fear that I have. I don't know. But I was just like, oh, what am I going to say? Am I going to look like an idiot? I don't really know what I'm talking about. And then I was like, hold on a minute. Like all I need is like a three bullet points, right? Three bullet points. And then I can nail this topic. And I was like, I'm going to go live. I went live for 4.5 minutes. I can't remember what I talked about exactly, but it definitely felt good, right? And what I said felt good. And you know, people are paralyzed by fear. Like this is what I see. I see a lot of people on Twitter like saying, oh, I'm an imposter. And oh, I, you know, it's like one guy this morning, which I thought was super interesting because I'm going through a similar thing with a lot of my YouTube videos, is he said, oh, I feel like just throwing out all my old writing, right? And I was like, well, I feel like that about my YouTube videos. And it's like, but then there is a progression, you know, like we have to start somewhere. And actually, if you put, you know, one foot in front of the other, then you are much further ahead than the person that's done nothing. And taking action, right? You're never going to be perfect. Like I looked at Imposter Syndrome Awareness Day today, and I was like, yesterday at the end of the day, I was like, oh, I did this wrong, did that wrong, didn't tweet enough beforehand, and didn't do this, didn't do that. And it's like, look, it's the third year that we've done this. And actually, we had a debrief today. We had a conversation about it. And the skills and abilities that we picked up from this year have given us a much more well-rounded plan for next year, right? And this is the point. Like, I wasn't happy at all. I was just like, look, I was actually depressed. I was like, I just felt awful. I was like, well, it could have been better. And then I reminded myself, I was like, actually, looking and listening to some of the videos yesterday that were recorded at the event, I learned loads of cool stuff about imposter syndrome. The link with imposter syndrome and narcissism was one of the videos. That was really super interesting. Don't ask me about that because I didn't pick up that much information. So I need to go back and kind of learn a bit more about that. But you know, we all feel inadequate, right? When we're learning something new. And that's what Jordan Peterson, Dr. Peterson said. He's like, look, I've just been given this job. I've got a new job, right? It's like, okay, so I feel inadequate. I've never done the job before. It's like, well, sure, but everybody feels like that when they start a new job. Like that, like that's just life, right? Like just suck it up, buttercup, is kind of my attitude, and get on with it. But I think that there is a very, very fine line between imposter syndrome and serious mental health conditions. Yeah. And this is very serious. If you feel that you have a serious mental health condition, you need to actually get help from a coach, from a counselor, from, you know, a specialist in this area. Anyone listening to this, you want to reach out to me, I can recommend like loads and loads of coaches, depending upon who you are and what you want to achieve. But it's like, we've all felt like a fraud, right? Like we all have, yeah? And it's just life, isn't it?
I think, well, there's degree, in my opinion, there are degrees of all of that. When you feel like a fraud, Nathaniel, doing what you do, as I remind you every time, if what you did, what you're doing would be easy, there'll be another million people doing it. And that. So when you feel like, oh, my, it's a matter of degree, it's a matter of achievement and so on. If I may go back to a couple of things you said, The crazy making thing for me, for you, for people who talk to other people, who coach other people, who get paid to do that, and do it out of the goodness of their hearts, is where, oh, I can't do this. I want to, but I can't. And you get the whining. You know, I remember when I got my 12-year-old daughter a baseball cap that said no whining. And I made her wear it when she was racing on the circuit 2 years later as a teenager on skis. She still wore a cap, said no whining, because if you whine, I'm gone. Anyway, but when I get the whining and, well, you know, and I make a quick determination that the person I'm talking to is in fact capable, but perhaps suffering for something you described. Perhaps there's a piece of imposter syndrome there. And then I ask the dumb question. Well, have you tried? Well, no. Now that is crazy making. Well, why haven't you tried? Well, okay. And then you get all the soft stuff. It all boils down to lack of ambition, fear of failure. Those would be the biggest buckets. And I say, you know, it's kind of like when you throw the kid in the pool, say, swim. You know how to. And the kid has to swim. Because you stand there and say, if you don't swim, you're going to drown. That is crazy making for me. Now, addressing what you said about, gee, I should have said this, I listened to this and all that. You and I have talked about this before. I say this all the time. The unhappiest guy in the room, when we finish a project, and we've done it really well, let's finish, it's great, great. The unhappiest guy in the room is me. Now, how does that make any sense? Well, the reason I'm unhappy because I know I could have done better. So then, am I manifesting a clear imposter syndrome? One of those is called a perfectionist. Heck, man, you know me well. I'm far from perfectionist. However, I have to realize, and somebody wrote a brilliant book, 97% solution, 90% solution. It's very difficult to achieve 100% solutions in almost anything. Hey, listen, my friend, the brain surgeon, also thinks he could have done better. Well, hey, the patient lived, but I could have done better. I think that sometimes people like you and me end in a place where things worked out, everybody's happy, and I'm thinking, I could have done a lot better. Now, why didn't I? I'd like to think that it's not, I'm not suffering an imposter syndrome. I don't feel like a failure. What I feel is that I could have done better had I done more or better homework. I could have done better, but the circumstances didn't allow it. Ran out of time, ran out of resources, human and otherwise. This is all there is. Now, the way so I could sit there and say, the thing, I see the thing on TV or whatever, and it's really good. And I say, oh, man. I hope my kids don't tear this apart because it would be embarrassing. But the takeaway for me ends up, okay, now that we've done this, what is next?
Yeah.
And something you and I preach. I always ask the next question, the next one, next, and next, because I am not going to invent another AI. By the way, we were into that. We weren't the AI man in the 80s. I was just too stupid to give it a good name. But I'm going to invent the next AI. I'm going to invent a cure for an orphan disease. I'm going to achieve some level of greatness that, my God, the world's going to stop. I'm not going to get there. So when I conclude something, I've been working on this for decades. I say, when I come up with that brilliant end or the brilliant conclusion, brilliant, stupid. When I come up with that, I have to recognize that, to focus on the fact that it is not entirely conclusive. My great conclusion is nothing more than a testable hypothesis. In other words, okay, done. Now, if this is true, what is next? Ask more questions and ask more and more and more. You know, to quote one of the great poets of our lifetime, John Lennon, man, it's an oyster. It's a submarine. You know, there's more. Just keep looking. But that to me is a perhaps pedestrian take on some level of imposter syndrome. But again, the crazy making part is when you talk to somebody who says, I need to be kind to myself. I can't. What do you mean you can't do this? You know, you can pursue your art and eat steak. You can pursue your art and be bankrupt.
Yeah, yeah. Very much so. But I think I've been talking a lot about this recently over the last 3 years, like I say, and studying in depth into confidence, into ability with you. We've talked a lot about success. And I love the fact that you don't accept failure. Failure is not an option, right? And that's the thing, is that you can go through these things in life. But having a tribe of people who you can call upon, who support you emotionally, they encourage you, but also some of them give you a healthy dose of reality, right? I think that really, really helps. And the people who we talked to about imposter syndrome, Dr. Melissa Sassi, and Kim Adele Randall, a number of other people. There are so many people talking about imposter syndrome right now. I think perhaps people are sick of imposter syndrome. I think maybe we just change the day and call it Confidence Day, right? Because it's like, you know what? Actually, if everybody has imposter syndrome, why not focus on confidence? Yeah. So how do you master confidence, Stephen? If I'm sitting there and I'm like, maybe I'm a C-level executive, or I'm an entrepreneur, or I'm someone who wants to be, you know, taken seriously, right? But I don't feel confident. Yeah? I'm not saying I don't. I'm saying I don't in certain areas. I think everybody has areas they don't feel confident in. But how do you combat that? Like, is there like an internal thing that you say to yourself, like, stop, or like, how do you face up to that and move forwards to success, in your opinion?
Well, you said something that makes me smile, because again, I refer to her often, Annie, my wife, because she is wonderfully introspective. And she's not the mercurial person that I am. My, you know, on a scale of emotions from here to here, hers go from here to here. Mine go from here to here. I run a narrow band between being reasonable and homicidal.
That's why I love working with you, Stephen. I love it. It's brilliant.
Well, you are a terrific balance for me, without a doubt. Anybody watching, listen to this, you need to know that. The hours, and there are many, at various hours of the day, because Nathaniel and I are 9 hours apart, so we might be talking at 3 a.m. my time, or midnight his time. Doesn't matter, because the topics that we talk about at length and write about are phenomenal. You said something that I giggle, because my Annie will say, well, you know, you need to not do that, and you should do that more. And I said, hold on a second. And I start poking my head. And she said, what are you doing? I'm trying to find that little toggle switch. Not a problem. I'll just throw the little switch, and I'm going to do that. Now, on a more serious thing, how do you do that? Well, often it's a matter of necessity. It's like, dude, you got to swim. I mean, you know, you got to. You have rent to pay, you have kids to feed. To develop confidence, and this is the, remember, please, what I said earlier is, so why haven't you done this? In my opinion, one of the things that boosts confidence more than anything else is success. Now, little successes. So you create an environment. Look, man, you know this. I don't rely on a lot of people for my direction, my mental sanity, but without a doubt, I have a couple of guiding lights, a couple of people who look at me and say, do you happen to recall the moment in time you suffered brain damage? You want to do that? Okay. But borrowing a little bit from my past, as you know, I played tennis at some level my whole life, and skied. Forgive me for this, but I was one of the better ones out there, and I won a bunch of tennis tournaments. And hey, hustling on tennis courts paid my bills when I was a kid. When you give a tennis lesson, there's two kinds of pros. Men and women like me, And by the way, you'll appreciate this. I learned more about tennis from two women, two Brits, who happened to be teaching here in West Hollywood, who together won 13 Wimbledons, and nobody ever heard of Louise Brough because she was generationally older. But the 70-year-old woman ran my butt ragged on tennis courts when I was top. Anyway, there's those, and my other friend, who shall remain nameless, who was also top 50 in the world, he and I played a bunch of tournaments in our 40, 45s, 50s, 55s. Louise, teaching, some poor hapless pupil would run down a ball and hit a kind of cool but mediocre shot back, which for me and Louise, so the dude got there and hit the ball back. But she'd stop, come up to me and say, that was one phenomenal shot. Because she didn't run it down, she didn't hit it back. She could have done all that. And say, now that is a brilliant shot, great shot. For him, it was a pretty good shot, particularly that this woman who won a bunch of Wimbledon said, now that was a great shot. And then she'd say, I'm going to feed you three more balls over there. Do it again. And once you know, the third time, the guy walks out of there, foot taller, 50 pounds thinner, and can't wait to get home and tell somebody about it. There is a moment that starts him on a path to confidence and success. Because next time he's on the tennis court with his buddy, he's going to, man, do everything he can to hit that thing again and again. And when he makes it, teach me more. Next thing you tell me to do, Barbara, that's what I'm going to do. My other friend, whom I've known for a long time, he and I won some tournaments together. He's still teaching on a pro level. I'm sitting there working my behind off, running like a dog. And I hit the single best passing shot on the backhand side I've ever had. I used to be known as the badass backhand, which I learned
from my mom. Oh, yeah, you learned that from your mother.
From my mom, who used to slap me across the head hitting a backhand.
Yeah.
And then I hit the greatest shot. And then a guy runs it down. And he hits a much better shot off of it. Makes me look stupid. And then he says, don't you hate it when I do that? Yeah, I want to beat you about the head with my tennis racket. One, talking to somebody who needs to lose 50 pounds. And they're great doctors. Well, you got to do this, slow, easy, learn, all that. And 3 months from now, you'll achieve some goal. I said the biggest single weight loss event in my life was when I bet my boss $1,000 a pound on weight loss. I was pretty big. He was bigger. And I said, oh, my God, I can't afford to lose $1,000 a pound, particularly to my boss. So I went for 30 days. I never ate 500 calories a day, ever. You know what that does to you?
Yeah, it's not good.
And when I walked into his office a month later, I said, you owe me $48,000 because he gained weight. He told me to get the hell out of his office. But then he was my chairman. the weight loss thing has to do with little successes that build on big successes. If I can't talk this person into doing something drastic for a few days, that the doctor said, oh, no, don't do that. It's not healthy. Listen, no matter what the hell you do to yourself is healthier than carrying that around your heart. So when you get on that scale at exactly 7:02 in the morning, why not 7? Because I set 7:02. Mind game. And when you go eat, drink water, take a multivitamin, eat nothing for 3 days, you're going to be insane. Because you eat like a horse now. You're going to be nuts. At 7:02 in the morning, you get on the scale. And you do it next time and next time. At 3 days into it, you lost 7 pounds.
Doctor said you'll lose 20 pounds in 4 months. But, you know, the doctor is sending his kids to private school by you coming every week for a visit. Now,
of course,
nothing spurs that weight loss more than to see progress, to see success. You get on that scale and say, my God, my work pays off like this. The teaching moment, if there is one, is to create an environment for the people you work with, you coach, you whatever their circumstances are, where they can achieve little successes they can build on. They can, hey, you know what? It's hey, Bob, it's possible, isn't it?
Absolutely.
You haven't done it but before. What
you've just said a lot of really useful information there because God, it I is about. So. Well, it's
I
true.
I enjoyed because, it. I hope so.
Well, look, I've been listening. I've been listening very carefully to you over the past few months. We've been working together for a long time now, and I do listen to you. You're very interesting, and you have a lot of wisdom, and that wisdom is actually confirmed by other sources who are well known these days, like Dr. Andrew Huberman. I don't know if you've seen him, but he's my age. He's a Stanford professor. Into jiu-jitsu, weight training, everything I'm into, right? But what he says is, and also Joe Rogan, they talk about jiu-jitsu and how when you are doing jiu-jitsu, you are those endorphins from when you either you get a move on someone else or you like escape a move. So if someone's like trying to choke you out or put you in an armbar and you escape that move, you are winning with endorphins, and those endorphins are training your brain to continue on your journey because it's an enjoyable process. That's why Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is so addictive, because people are addicted to two things. They're addicted to the adrenaline, and they're actually addicted to the endorphins from success, from actually achievement, right? And what you said a minute ago, which is brilliant, is those things, success is definitely repeated day after day, right? And that confidence, it's like, look, if you try and hit a tennis ball or you try and ski, you've never done it before, sure, you're going to suck, right? Like, even if you're brand new, you're still going to suck, but you're going to have talent. And if you can find someone who's going to encourage you, and a team of people is even going to encourage you, like my jiu-jitsu buddies in class, right? Like we encourage each other. Okay, we try and kill each other, but we encourage each other. So if someone gets a good move, you know, at the end of the class, we'll say, good move, that was really good, you know. And this happens regularly, right? And positive reinforcement is hugely important. But this imposter syndrome thing, it's like you are actually negatively reinforcing yourself by saying you can't do things. And in my opinion, you should be doing stuff every day that pushes you out of your comfort zone every day, right? And, you know, half an hour ago, we sat here before we came on and I said, look, I don't know what I'm going to talk about, Stephen. I really don't know what I'm going to talk about. But I know you know a lot about confidence. You know a lot about success. I know a lot about imposter syndrome and confidence. And between us, we actually have a lot of valuable information that's going to encourage someone and inspire them to move beyond this label that apparently I think the people that actually came up with the term, I heard that they'd actually said, oh, we're not sure about this anymore. So that's an interesting twist, you know?
I think that, well, first of all, thank you for the kind words, but half hour before you and I got together today, Annie said, so what are you talking about today? I said, imposter syndrome. She says, I know what that is, but give me more. I said, I'm not going to give you more. Have you prepared? I said, it's been rattling in my head since Nathaniel mentioned it. And you mean, did you make any notes? No. Why? Because Schooler is going to guide me by the nose. And he's gonna open the door for me to say some things. And I'm pretty good, you know, impromptu stuff. But make no mistake, this is not frivolous. It's not talking out of your head. The process, you and I, we got here over months.
Yeah. But also, Stephen, I'm sorry, I'm going to interrupt. But also, when you were running this billion-dollar marketing business, you grew it from literally a bankrupt company, and you worked there, I think, for 19 years, and you grew it into a billion-dollar-a-year enterprise, right? And along the way, when you fired the entire management team and you hired everybody on the ground floor of the production facility, because back then you were doing mail, so you were sending out lots of parcels and lumpy mail, which is like, you know, I don't know, something like this boat sent in an envelope or whatever, right? Like with some sales message or letters.
Millions a month.
Hey, maybe you sent, did you send any screwdrivers? Like these are good, you know, Draper screwdriver. They're good.
If it's expensive and useless, I probably sold it.
but you when you fired the entire management team, right? And then you went onto the floor and you hired this young kid who was managing, he was managing a production line, right, of some kind of the factory, because you had 3 million square feet of warehousing, and you were providing a lot of items and sending them out. You had special deals with all the mail, with mail in America, American mail or whatever you call it, US mail. And you had this young chap who I believe was from Mexico. He lied about his age, and he didn't think he had the confidence to run this thing, right? So how did you encourage this young chap who literally was like, what do you mean? I'm not even that age. Like, you've got my age wrong, and I don't speak English very well. And what did you do to get him from there to where he is now? Because now I think he actually is head of something. He's head of of some kind of transport division operations or something in a big business.
He's head of distribution for one of the biggest manufacturers, parts companies in the country. We talk about leadership, and I think about it, I write about it, I talk about it. And the bottom line from my understanding of leadership, I mean, I started out with writing something decades ago, that 72 things a leader is not. By then I understood I didn't know what the hell it was. And then it became 26 things a leader is, then it became 23 things a leader is not. Then I became leadership homogenized, where I'm at today. There are many ways to lead. You lead by example. You lead by, and hold on, ethereal stuff you lead by. You lead by intimidation. You lead by example. You lead because you have the checkbook. You lead by laissez-faire. Hey, everybody's going to do what the right thing, and I'll just cash in stock options. There's a lot of ways to lead people. Now, leadership without being involved is something that Aaron Montgomery did in the 1800s. That doesn't work anymore. And everybody out there, check out Leadership Homogenized. Anyway, so you have a kid that I believe was literate by the time I met him. He was 4 or 5 years younger than he said he was. And he was a low supervisor in a building with 400 people and 300,000 square feet, just a fulfillment center, you know. All those great conveyors, a mile, two conveyors running around. It looked like a Lego set, you know? And yet they were industrial engineers and all that. And the kid one day, when thing broke down, did something just wacky. And I said, what? I mean, he just did something that everybody said, Ernie's nuts. And then overnight, Ernie got the electricians to rewire the building. And now the conveyors were not going this way, they're going that way. That's not the way it's done. Ernie intuitively figured out a Manning paradigm called the newborn, every joke is new. He didn't know it's supposed to only go that way. And the engineer said, they all go that way. Well, mine's going this way. Revolutionary. Now, how do you get him from there when you call the kid in your office and say, Monday, you run the place. Well, wait a minute. I have a boss who has a boss. Well, you're going to be the boss. Well, my boss, your boss is not going to be here Monday. And then the kid looked at me and said, well, you do know that I'm a little younger than you think I am. And I'm learning English. I'm good now. And I said, I also know you're married to this young woman in the other building. How do you know? It's a secret. I know. So the kid, I said to the kid, I know you can do this. And the kid says, looked at me and said, why would I be able to do this? Because anybody who thought about doing that has capacity. Now, don't give me this thing like I don't know how to do that. Monday, you're going to have to figure it out Monday morning. Now, the thing that a lot of you can't lead people, manage people to failure. So I then looked at this kid. I said, yo, I'm around. Also, John, who used to be your boss's boss's boss, he's coming back. If you have questions, you got two industrial engineers in this building, and I'm good 24 hours a day. So when you walk in, you're not going to feel like an orphan because we're going to support you. So the ultimate point is you can't promote someone or push someone to failure rather than success. And when on Monday morning, the kid showed up, the first guy he ran into was me. Hey, how you doing? White as a sheet. I said, you want to have the conveyor, the horseshoe going this way? Are you going to reverse it? He said, what do you think I should do? I said, I'll see you in the middle of the day. We're having a staff meeting. I left. And the kid stood there. I said, oh, my God, 400 people and all this. Now, by the end of the day, his numbers just changed dramatically. And he absolutely said to one of the industrial engineers, gee, can you help me with this? And the engineer said, sure. You want to make it go that way? Make it go that way. I wouldn't. But the most successful facility of the ones in the world was this one. Because he got, and he had it. And two, we did not promote him to failure. We promoted him to success by supporting him. Now, you said that earlier. You have to have a team, a support system. You have to have people you call up. Who do I call when I feel my proverbial butt in a vice? Now, we talk about this all the time. I'm a shameless researcher. You know, you laugh every time I say this. I call the Pope to ask a theological question. That nice man took the call. But then I will also call the CEO of a major bank who ultimately says, what do you want from me? I'm a shameless researcher. So my fallback one is Annie, because she's just that smart. And then there are a couple people in my life that I think are very, very, they're very smart. They have street smarts. The couple great, humbly, world-class educators, thinkers that I know are useful if I want a 4,000-word answer. But the part about, can you tell me how not to jump off this bridge? Well, here's a bibliography. So I look at the practical experience and knowledge of some of the people I reach out to. Hell, every once in a while, when I get into a bit of a soft topic, I'll call my daughter, my youngest daughter. Alex is just whip smart. Good God, she's smart. Clearly, mother's gene pool. You have to have people you pick up the phone. You and I do this. Oh, yeah, and I pick up the phone. Know that. And I write emails, and I get on the damn airplane. I'm quicker to get on the airplane than most pilots are. It's hard to say no to Schooler or Manning face-to-face. It's kind of hard to do. But then true. I would not entertain anything in social media without calling you. Insane. If I spent the rest of my life studying social media forever compared to you, I will be a talented beginner. So
I'm doing a course right now. Oh, that's my friend, two courses, YouTube and social media courses, right? Because it's like what happens over time is we get confident, right? We get confident in our ability, but then what happens is that things move forward, things change. In the industry that I'm really in social media, in marketing, you're in marketing, things change, right? Fundamentals don't change, but things change, right? Approaches change, and things that we just don't know, right? And that's where your approach to research is so important. And that's why I'm studying like all the time. When I get out of jiu-jitsu class, I come home, I'm like, sometimes I get totally smashed and I come home and I'm like, why did that happen? How am I going to stop that from happening? What did I learn? And then I look at what I learned. I look at the mistakes that I made. And then I revisit that the next time. So then I go and I'm like, right, what am I going to work on today? So I've started, you know, focusing on what I'm going to work on. And that's the same with social media, same with YouTube, same with podcasts, same with everything, right? It's making sure you don't tap the table, making sure you don't shout at the microphone, you got the microphone close enough to your face, etc. Mm-hmm. Like there are things that we learn, but then we get at home with our environment, and then we forget. So that's why we need to revisit. And then that builds more confidence, more success, because we're always staying on our toes, right? Like that's how I look at it. That's why I work with you, because you have decades of business experience, you know, 5 decades of business experience, top level, right? Like I love working with you. It's great fun. And I learn a lot of stuff, you know?
Thank you, Nathaniel. You're most kind. I appreciate it. I promise you. You made my day just a moment ago. I was smiling because you're talking about microphones. Now I'm going to bring this closer so you can see it. The reason I own this fancy microphone and this buffer thingy, Bob, and a fantastic stand, which I spent $46 of my hard-earned money, so I can have it on my desk and out of my way so I can type and do everything else I do. The reason for all this, folks, Nathaniel Schooler, he told me I had to do this, which is why I did it.
But yeah, we're getting there. But I like your approach, because it's a very, you have a forgiving approach to work and to success. And it's a continual improvement. It's like the Kaizen approach, right? And if you are going to banish imposter syndrome for good, first of all, my personal opinion, right, is you need to be aware of your abilities. You need to find people that are going to encourage you and positively encourage you to learn new things and to master your competence, which then leads to an increase in confidence. And eventually you get better and better and better at making sure that you don't have as much of this inner voice saying you're not very good at things.
I think that anybody watching this may encourage you to back this up 3 minutes and listen to that again. Okay.
Listen very to that nice. Again. William, that's very nice. He lives quite close to you, actually, over in Hollywood.
Thank you, William.
Thanks, William.
Well, let's meet up for Diet Soda.
You'll like him. He's launched a book. And him and his wife know my sister Heidi and Ken as well. A lovely, lovely.
William, please reach out. you know, what you were saying a moment ago is I remember the day you and I, you good folks watching and listening, you need to know that we do spend time together. We don't just get together and talk for an hour. I think that some people would be surprised at the amount of content that we swap back and forth, the emails, and they range from 3 words to you lost your mind to paragraphs. And
what are you telling me? I lost my mind again. Yeah, well.
No,
yeah.
You tell me I lost my mind. and really meaningful paragraphs that I have to stop, freeze everything out, and read again what Schooler just wrote.
But I remembered the exact moment in time when I woke up to having to understand the difference between what I am, who I am, and what I represent. At the same time, it was so became so crystal clear to me, mainly because I had some people in my life that were just that much smarter, more experienced, more world-wise than I was, that it was very critical for me to understand more so what I don't know than what I do know. So I became very clear on what I don't know and the relevance of that in any paradigm, business life, and so on. And when I figured that out, that most importantly for me is to understand what I don't know.
That's when I began
to seek out people all over the world. And, you know, as I said, shameless researcher. And I found... But
can I just stop you there? Because you reminded me of something and I don't want to write it down. I need to get it out. Right? because you reminded me, because it's like, look, we're in this society where we compare ourselves to everybody else that's out there, even people who are not alive anymore. We compare ourselves to everybody, right? And the nature of social media, I believe, actually adds to imposter syndrome. I think that is really, really awful, because it's like, look, not everybody has lives like that. A lot of these people you see on social media, their lives are fake. Yeah. They never show you the struggles, the stress, the grief. And in fact, do not ever expect to be good at something overnight. Like, there is never an overnight success. Like, you really do not never underestimate the amount of work, time, effort, connections, blood, sweat, tears, money that goes into someone becoming successful, right? You will not achieve anything without pulling your finger out, right? You know?
How many times, you know, I've heard this a few times. People say to my wife, you people are lucky. You have a nice house. You drive nice cars. You're lucky. And what's it take? Nothing to it. You wake up before everybody else in the morning. You go to sleep after everybody else. You don't know it's Christmas Eve. You outwork everyone else for about 25 years. Then you get lucky. Luck is, I'll spare you most of the cliches. Luck is a byproduct of hard work. Also, you have to be ready to become lucky. But it's maddening when people think that, you know, the quintessential story about the actor who waits tables 7 days a week for 14 years and finally gets a great part and becomes an overnight success. So going back, I'll tell people, you know what? And every once in a while I get people to say, you're giving me platitudes. Okay, so I say, wait a minute. One of us has cleaned rat cages in the laboratory. I think it was me. One of us stood on a dock in Vladivostok, March 1, in 0-degree weather, wearing shorts to do a transaction. It was me. It was not you.
Is that when you had the big briefcase?
The bankers had the briefcase. And I look at people and say, you know, and it's, I'm reminded of this talk I gave at the Marshall School at USC on international entrepreneurship. So there's 120 MBA candidates and PhDs and 12, 14 professors and me, the immigrant kid from a little town in Romania. And I'm wearing jeans. I'm wearing a clean T-shirt. And all these people at 2 o'clock in the afternoon are bored because, you know, they're entitled. And I said, you know what the difference with you people and me? And you want to talk about success. You want to talk about what it takes. You guys are here for an hour and a half. And what are you going to do after that? Go have a latte. None of you have another class. It's Friday. And by the way, the gig ended up being 2.5 hours. But and I said, Now, let me tell you the difference between you and me and what it takes. Today, my life depended on the traffic on the 405 freeway because I just flew in from Frankfurt. And when the plane comes over in LAX, comes over the big 405 freeway, you know, which is driving the 405 during the day is like having a root canal without anesthetic. And so you fly over, I look down at 8 lines of traffic to see how heavy is it? Because if traffic is heavy, when I get off the plane, if it's not heavy, get off the plane, I'm going to go north, get off the mall, go home, take a shower, change clothes. If it's heavy, not enough time. I go south, come downtown to USC. And I said, just so you know, people that do what I do always have a couple of clean t-shirts and another pair of jeans, pressed jeans, rolled up in my little carry-on and a toiletry kit. Because you never know when it starts to snow in Northern Europe, you know, and you can't get out. And so I took a mini bath in your bathroom over there and I changed clothes. Now, that's the difference for you and me. That's what you do when you get up in the morning and you have to create your own action. When you have to seek success, when you say, hey, I'm going to swim. And I said, by the way, that ain't the highlight of my story. Hey, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound. This was my second trip to Europe in the last 7 days. I was there for 2 days. I had to come back and I went back and now I'm here. Now I'll be home for a week. And they looked at me like, huh?
Yeah, because they're not willing. This is the thing, is that most people are not willing to do what it takes, right? Like that's basically what we're talking about. I think our next episode on Positive Personal Power Podcast should be about that. You know, are you willing to do what it takes, right? Like this is a huge thing. I think the Imposter Syndrome Awareness Day, it was great. Really happy people came to that. We had some great content. Did some really interesting, tweeting and all that kind of good stuff. And you know, I think next year we may end up rebranding it, changing it, you know, and actually banishing it for good, right? Because it's like, look, it's confidence and success and happiness that we're in essence helping people to focus on. But you know, without a plan, you've got to have a plan.
Please understand. If you don't, haven't focused on this yet, it's people like you that can start people on a better path to confidence. When you tell people that you can do it, then here's how. And then you get people like me who beat up on you. Why aren't you doing it? We'll help you, but you bloody do it. You know, just do it. You know, it's the only thing Nike ever said that I like. Just do it. Phil and I are not exactly getting along for some years now, ever since I wrote a piece called The Fourth Reich, China, and Nike.
Brutal.
I conflated Nike with the genocide of the Uyghurs in China.
I remember reading that. That was a good piece.
It happens to be true. And I said something along the lines about... Phil being, hey, Phil, you are a fill in the blank. And I think that somehow that filtered through. So
it killed your relationship there.
I have now given away 160 pieces of Nike gear that I owned that were all free from Nike.
You didn't send me any Nike gear. What the hell? No skis, no Nike gear.
You're not getting Nike gear from me. I gave it all away.
No skis either. I can't believe it. I'm going to send you some skis. Never get any skis.
Listen, the Nike gear is gone. My skis come from Volvo in Europe. But I put all my Nike gear in a very large pile. And I was going to set it on fire and send film to Nike. And then my wife, who always says the wiser position, said, honey, how about we just give it away to the homeless? Okay, the homeless won't care that Nike supports genocide in China. So we gave it to the homeless.
But you've just reminded me of something there. I know we're not in a rush, are we? We're not in a rush, are we?
It's 59 minutes. Talking to you, I'm never in a rush.
So look, right, I mean, I think we need to take a step back from where we're at right now, what we think people should be like and everything else. And we need to say, well, OK, so perhaps someone's listening to this and they are absolutely broken, right? They've got no confidence in themselves whatsoever. They think that they've got no abilities. They are literally stuck in a rut, right? And in my opinion, personal opinion, I think that they should go to someone. Well, first of all, they should listen to all the other podcast episodes that Stephen and I have actually done, because those, you know, it's like a boot camp in the military, right? It will shape up your brain. But I think you should go to someone who you know who can help you, because when you're in that place and you feel that you've got no confidence, you've got no abilities, someone who knows you may actually turn around and say, do you know what? I think you're actually really good at this. And I think that you should go and do this, 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 and this. And that's going to maybe help you to get on the trajectory of success. Because that's the worst thing. Once you get into a downward spiral, depression, sadness, everything else, you're going to take ages to get out of that. But if you can find the right person who will literally just help you to snap out of it, that could be actually transformational. And I think that is something to look at. What do you think?
That's motherhood and apple pie stuff. It's absolutely right. I want to add one thing to that. If you think that you need to do whatever, and the woman or man that has done that well, and you'd love to do that, and they're successful, you reach out to them. Now you say, wait a minute. Now, why would that person share with me the key to their success? I am not going to repeat the story of the chicken, because it's like you make a speech to a bunch of bright people talking about the stuff you do. Why would I do that? However, the reality, and I'm telling you all this is an absolute, I have no idea who Nathaniel Schooler is, but I understand he is the guy on that topic. That's when I reach out. I sent the email where I talk about Nathaniel Schooler for a long paragraph or two. Hey, I know this about you. You do this, you know this, your expertise is this. And I describe you. And then I say, I have an issue. I have a problem. I'm stuck on this. I think you can help me. I would appreciate it. And they say, here's my problem. Frame it neatly, specifically. And you say, I'm stuck. You reach out. The life lesson here is it's absolutely astounding what you get back. Now, why the hell would that guy tell me the secrets of his success? Sometimes because I ask really nicely. And I express my appreciation for what they are, what they do, how they do it. And what's the quid pro quo? I'm grateful. And two, when I get there, whatever the there is, if there's anything I can ever do for you, please reach out. Say to the man who's doing $47 billion doing the thing you're trying to do. The amazing thing is how absolutely willing all those folks are to help out. It's in the psyche. You know, I laugh about this because I tell people, you know, you walk up to a person you hate, you don't like, hate, bad word. You don't like, they don't like you in a business. They just don't like you. And you walk up to this man or woman and says, and you say, I got this terrible problem. I don't know how to fix this. It's business, you know. You know how to do this and I don't. Can you help me out? You say to somebody who just says, you are the scum of the earth. The whole company knows that guy doesn't like you. Okay. And you sit there and say, can you help me out, please? And you get the, I'm busy. The dog ate my homework, whatever. And 99% of the time they say, oh, okay. Then they go do it for you.
Absolutely.
And you walk out the door and say, I don't have to do it. And then when they get home, I will bet the farm on this one. they will say to a mate, friend, you know that Manning guy? He came to me. He was stuck. Man, bad. He asked me for help. The husband wife says, that guy asked you for help? That jerk? Yeah, he asked me. I'm so busy. But you know what? I did it for him. I'm such a freaking hero. I did it
That's
for
great.
Him.
That's great.
Meanwhile, I'm out there doing whatever I'm doing, saying, Bob there has got it done for me. Who wins
that
one?
It's a psychological thing, though, because it's like people love.
Nathaniel,
they love to be.
Who won that thing?
Well, you did, but they love to be higher up,
did.
You see.
We both did.
But they love to be higher up, don't they, in the way that they feel bigger and better. And there's no reason why you shouldn't make them feel bigger and better. But, Stephen, thank you. We're going to continue this in the next episode, right? And I know that we could carry on for another half an hour, but I think that's a good place to finish. And, you know, if you are stuck with imposter syndrome, you're stuck with confidence, you're stuck with without achieving success, go and listen to our other episodes. We have many positive personal power episodes for you to gain the knowledge that you need to move beyond that. And listen to the Imposter Syndrome Awareness Day ones. They're all on the Legacy Media Hub. And buy Stephen's book. You must buy Stephen's book.
Please.
Ciao. Thanks Please for listening. Do.
Thank you.
Thanks for watching and listening to Positive Personal Power Podcast. Get access to all our podcasts and other important updates on www.legacymediahub.com and subscribe wherever you listen and watch your podcasts on the Legacy Media Hub YouTube channel.